Welcome to episode 1459 of the 1010 Thrive podcast, brought to you by 1010 Thrive Ministries. 1010 Thrive, 10 minutes a day based on 10 guidelines for abundant living. In the previous episode, James took us into the moment that changed the direction of his life. For years, he had remained unconvinced by Jesus' claims, choosing the safety of the workshop over the uncertainty of faith. Then came the cross, the empty tomb, and the multiplying reports that Jesus was alive. Finally, the risen Christ appeared to James personally. Though James keeps the details of that encounter private, he tells us its result plainly. He believed. The brother who had once stood outside became a devoted follower, and the man who had resisted Jesus would soon become one of the central leaders of the early church. In this episode, James reflects on what happened next, how a craftsman from Nazareth became a pillar in Jerusalem, bearing the weight of a growing and sometimes divided community. Acts of the Apostles, Part 2, Chapter 4.
Paul calls me a pillar. In his letter to the Galatians, he writes of James and Cephas and John as those reputed to be pillars. The word for a column, a load-bearing structure, the kind of thing the building cannot stand without. I have thought about that word for many years. A pillar does not move. It does not go on journeys or write letters to far cities or appear dramatically in visions on the road to Damascus. It stays. It bears weight. Other things are built from it. That is what Jerusalem required. Someone to stay. Someone around whom the weight could be distributed. I'm not sure I chose it. I think it chose me, but it is what I became.
Whoever wants to become great among you must be your servant, and whoever wants to be first must be slave of all. For even the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve, and to give his life as a ransom for many.
The Jerusalem church in those early years was unlike anything the ancient world had seen. People were selling property and bringing the proceeds to share. Not because anyone required it, because they had looked at each other and decided that what they had was not really theirs. They were sharing meals daily, caring for widows, meeting in the temple courts and in houses, growing faster than the structures built to contain them. My role was not spectacular. I taught. I settled disputes. I wrote carefully, slowly, the way I had learned to work wood. The kind of practical guidance that communities need when the initial fire has been lit and someone has to figure out how to keep it from burning the house down. Peter went to the cities. Paul went to the Gentiles. John went where John went. I stayed. And Jerusalem was where the movement's center of gravity remained, so the staying was not nothing. It was, in fact, everything that holding the center requires. I will tell you what I learned about leadership in those years. Not authority, leadership. There is a difference. Authority says, I have been given a position, and therefore you will do as I say. Leadership says, I have been given a responsibility, and therefore I will do whatever the work requires. My brother was a leader. He washed feet. I tried to learn from that. The question that nearly tore the movement apart arrived disguised as a practical matter. Do Gentile believers need to be circumcised and keep the law of Moses? It sounds like a question about ritual. It was not. It was a question about identity. Whether the community of Jesus' followers was a renewed Israel that Gentiles could enter only by becoming Jews, or something genuinely new. A family formed not by ethnic inheritance, but by faith. The answer you gave determined who sat at the table and whether the door was wide or narrow. There were men of genuine faith on both sides. The people who believed circumcision was required were not villains. They were Jews who loved the Torah and believed God's covenant ran through it. They were trying to be faithful to what they had received. But Peter had stood in a Roman centurion's house and watched the Spirit fall on uncircumcised men. Paul had seen the same thing in city after city. The evidence was impossible to argue with. God was not waiting for circumcision before giving the gift.
James, what say you?
Brothers, listen to me. Simon has described how God first intervened to choose a people for his name from the Gentiles. The words of the prophets are in agreement with this. It is my judgment, therefore, that we should not make it difficult for the Gentiles who are turning to God. Not make it difficult. The gospel was already asking everything: loyalties, social world, in many cases, safety. We were not adding requirements that neither we nor our fathers had been able to bear perfectly. The door was going to be wide. The council agreed. We wrote a letter asking Gentile believers to abstain from a short list of things, not to make conversion easier, but to make the table possible, so that Jewish and Gentile believers could actually sit together and be the thing they were meant to be. It was not a perfect solution, but it was a faithful one, and it held. I wrote a letter, not the council letter, my own, the one that bears my name. There were people in the community who had heard the gospel of grace and concluded that grace meant nothing was required of them. That faith was a belief you held, not a life you lived. That you could call yourself a follower of Jesus and treat your neighbor badly, show favoritism to the wealthy, neglect the poor, and it was all covered under the canopy of grace. I had grown up in the same house as Jesus. I had watched him treat every person he encountered, the carpenter's customer, the synagogue official, the beggar at the gate, with the same careful, costly attention. He did not have a category for faith without works. So I wrote what I knew. What good is it, my brothers and sisters, if someone claims to have faith but has no deeds? Can such faith save them? People have set this against Paul's teaching on grace and found a contradiction. I do not think there is one. Paul was fighting people who believed you earned your way to God by keeping the law. I was fighting people who believed you needed to do nothing at all. We were standing back to back, facing different errors. The truth was in Jesus, who was both grace and demand, both the one who washed feet and the one who said, "Now go and do likewise." I tried to write a letter worthy of what I had seen in my brother's life. The pillar does not move. That is both its limitation and its gift. I think I would have been what I am regardless. A craftsman. Someone who works slowly, measures carefully, does not move until the joint is true. The church in Jerusalem needed that. What I learned in those years of staying while others went, the body needs all its parts. The ones who go and the ones who stay. The ones who speak to thousands and the ones who settle disputes one at a time in a room. The ones whose names travel to every corner of the empire and the ones whose names are known only in one city for one generation. He called all of it the same thing: service.
James reminds us that some of the most important work in God's kingdom is not dramatic. It is steady. It is the work of remaining when others leave, listening when others speak, resolving conflicts that no one else sees, and carrying responsibility without demanding recognition. The world often celebrates movement, visibility, and influence. God also values faithfulness, the pillar that stays in place and quietly bears the weight. James also teaches us that grace and obedience belong together. We do not earn God's love through our works, but genuine faith cannot remain invisible. The grace that welcomes us also transforms us. It changes how we speak, how we treat the poor, how we use power, and who we allow to sit at our table. James had watched Jesus embody that truth long before he understood who Jesus was. Now, as a leader, he sought to build a church that did the same. God may not call each of us to travel widely, preach to thousands, or become known beyond our own community. He may call us simply to stay, to serve, and to bear the weight entrusted to us. The question is not whether our service looks impressive. The question is whether it looks like Jesus, the one who held all authority and still knelt to wash feet. To be continued.